The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle. This is a podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today is April 8th, 2015, and we're sponsored by U.S. Wellness Meats. That's www.grasslandbeef.com. That's my good friend John Wood. I feel personally had people, guests on the show, that are ordering from John. In fact, John Hart yesterday, we had to keep going back and forth with last names because John is a good friend of John Wood, obviously. And we talked quite a bit about grass-fed diet, you know, where it's just ridiculous. We went back to basics, went on and on. Go out there again, once again, www.grasslandbeef.com. If you're lucky enough to get John on the phone, I promise you, awesome guy. His father's in his 90s, still working on the farm. And believe me, all the people associated with the show, their service to people is second to none, and you'll get that with John. So give John a call, or obviously you can order on his website. Our second person here that we're who's doing some advertising with us is Saugerties Chiropractic Center. They are in New York. This is strictly, I'm in upstate New York, if you know. So anybody in the New York area, this is for you. Mark Colligan is the chiropractor there, and to reach them, because they are in the middle right now of putting a brand new website together, it's 845-246-5020. Drop table, soft tissue work, trigger point, deep tissue laser. He does all the pulsed electromagnetic frequencies, sports injuries, you know, and he's in the, you know, performance potential. He's a real interesting guy to talk to. I've gone to him for over 10 years, and, give him a call. If you're lucky enough to get my good friend Joan down there, she will take good care of you. She's a great lady. I think the world of her. So once again, 845-246-5020. And our next person that who is now a regular on the show is Dr. William Wong. He's got his own podcast. He's worked with athletes his whole life. He's done a lot of Olympic lifting, et cetera, et cetera. He's got a great supplement company. You can go out and Google either Dr. Wong's Essentials or go out to www.docsprefer.com. Guy is blunt honest. I'm going to just tell you up front, if you don't want to hear the truth, you better be careful who you ask for. So Dr. Wong, we'll call you. Fabulous guy. I tell you, check him out. And his website, once again, is very easy to navigate through. Anything I've ever ordered through him, you get within 2 days. And Dr. Wong is sponsoring me for Iceland right now. Especially, I've been a little banged up. I'm on quite a bit of his formulas. His enzymes are the best. We were talking about that yesterday. So we'll have him on the 17th of this month, and I can't wait. I've got some great people. That's all I'm going to say. And last but not least, we got Roger LaPointe, who's a regular. He's been with me since the beginning of the podcast. That's www.atomicathletic.com. He is the president. And right now, he's got a sale on a super squat bar. It was regularly $299. Right now, it's $225 plus shipping. But he's also told me offline that the shipping costs, the way he breaks it up, are very manageable. In fact, pretty cheap the way he does it. Go out to his site. Check out that bar. If it's something you're interested in, I've got one coming. I'm hoping mine's going to be here in a week. And we're doing a lot of different shifting getting ready for Iceland because I've been nicked up a little bit. I'm going to have an awful lot of material out about that bar. We're building a Frankenstein trap bar right now. Wait till you see this thing. It'll blow your mind. That's one of my creations. And we're doing a lot of things different, mainly because we've got to get the body real sound and healthy before we go after those big stones. So, once again, that was Roger LaPointe. That's atomicathletic.com. Today, we have, I don't know if we announced this, but we have a new regular guest on the show, and he's going to be on every other week, and I couldn't be happier. We've got Bill Hinburn on with us now, and the first show he did was with us was a smash. People were like all over that show. We've got some great people, but Bill's a different guy. I talk to Bill a lot offline whenever I can. I love talking to this guy. He is so friggin' interesting. And the thing, when I went after Bill a while ago and he didn't come on at first, my whole thing was I like so many of these older guys that have been in the game, and Bill knows so much. And if you've ever been lucky enough to buy material from him, anything old school, he does have some of the newer stuff, obviously, like Brooks Cubic stuff, but you know, you want old Iron Man, like Perry Rader style, you know, any wrestling. I don't know if he's in there doing the wrestling anymore or not. He'll have to clear that up. I don't think he is. But anything that's the old genre, you can get. And that's the stuff I like to read. I think that stuff is the best. So we're going to talk about something. We talked about what we want to talk about here. And I think this is great because I don't even have a clue to what Bill's going to be saying. He's going to talk about mentors. Not only, you know, personally, but he's going to talk about mentors in business who have impressed him. And that ought to be pretty good because I don't think Bill impresses real easy. I can't speak for him, but I've talked to him enough where I think he's a lot like me. He's very choosy who he surrounds himself around with. So, Bill, I know I've been long-winded here, but I can't tell you how happy I am to have you on Motivation Muscle again, sir.
Thank you. I'm glad to be on the show again.
I'm glad to have you. Did I put you to sleep?
No, not at all.
Because I was like, I talked for so long. It's just we've got sponsors now, so we got to go with it. Why don't you give everybody a little bit about yourself out there? You know, and I don't believe that anybody doesn't know you, but if they haven't, why don't we make you more familiar with everybody out in Motivation and Muscle?
Sure. Where to begin? I started out back in the late 60s. Had a real interest in weight training, physical training of any kind, for a variety of reasons. But I began collecting as much material as I possibly could on a variety of different subjects. And I stumbled across the old timers, the guys that really started weight training in this country, and for that matter in Europe. And I became enamored with their approach, their creativity. This is way before the gym chains and what have you. And this is really what catapulted me into training. There was so much there that was not available to the average individual. So, like I say, I began collecting it, and I had a lot of duplicates. I was buying collections. I was trading materials and what have you. And I put together a catalog, and I started the mail order business around 1969. Then, of course, the internet came along, and I began with that. So I have both. And the material is time-tested. A lot of people will say, well, they will immediately think this is older material and it's aged and it's out of date. I love to hear that out of date part.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we've progressed. A human body still has the same number of arms and legs. We still have the same number of muscles, the bones, et cetera. And we still respond to progressive resistance exercise the same way, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's what it should be all about. For the most part, I think that you have to understand that over time, people want something that's new and different. New and different to me, and new and different to you would probably be two different things, seeing as how we come from different eras. I love to get a young fella, let's say 18, 20 years old, that says, how do I get big and strong? Well, you know, that's a broad, encompassing area there.
Yep.
You want to get big. You want to get strong. You want to be a bodybuilder. You want to get, you want to be strong. How? You want to be able to press more. You want to be able to squat more. Is this something that you want to do to improve in another sport? For example, football or what have you, basketball, baseball, wrestling. You know, you can have a large goal, but then you have to break it down. You have to focus on one particular thing. Well, you know, I'm 6'4" and I only weigh 200 pounds, you know. So I'm thin, I'm long boned, or I'm, 5'4" and I'm, I'm built like a fire plug. Okay.
Right.
Well, you know, it just depends on what you want to do. And the same holds through with nutrition. This is an interesting area.
Yeah.
But yeah, I provide publications, books and courses by many of the old timers. Alan Calvert, Mark Berry, Herman Garner, George Hackenschmitz, Thomas Inge, Bob Hoffman, David Willoughby, Sid Klein, Arthur Saxon, etc. I do have, you mentioned wrestling. I do have probably one of the rarest and most popular wrestling books on conditioning, and that is by John Jesse. That is one book that's extremely popular among personal trainers and, of course, coaches for high school and college, and of course, the wrestlers themselves.
Well, I got that book. I just wasn't sure if you're carrying them anymore, but you've been so far ahead of the curve all these years. I mean, I've seen other ones with books and stuff out there, but nothing ever matches what you got. I just want to ask you one question, Bill, before we break into the show. When you were out in your early days and you just started collecting, was it just by accident, or did you have the wherewithal to see into the future where you knew that this was going to be something that was going to catch, fire did you see that when you started collecting this, or did it just kind of evolve? I don't want to say did it happen by accident, but how did you see this in your mind's eye when you were starting to do this before?
I had no idea that that it would explode like it did.
Okay. Wow.
The big change with regard to progressive resistance exercise, it's evolved. For example, back, and I think we touched on this in our last segment, what had happened, there was, and it started out with just progressive resistance exercise, weightlifting, get bigger and stronger. That was it with Alan Calvert. Then, of course, along came something
strength
else that
health.
Paralleled it, and that was Olympic lifting. Okay, and that started out, that was one of the first modern day Olympic sports in 1896. It progressed to from one lift, if you will, to three lifts, five lifts, and back to three. But it paralleled with Alan Calvert. And in 1930s, it became Mark Berry became the first United States Olympic weightlifting coach. He coached 1932-1936. Mm-hmm. And in the 30s, and of course, Bob Hoffman came along and started out with a foundry, started out manufacturing barbells at his own foundry, and an Olympic set, had basic exercise plates, he had exercise sets, and then it progressed along those lines. The United States was very big in world Olympic weightlifting. It pretty much in the 40s and the early 50s was the top dog.
Okay? Yep.
And then along came substances.
Yep.
Steroids, and that was a big controversy in the late 50s. And at that time, the Eastern Bloc and Russia outdid the United States.
Sure.
At the same time, I think a lot of people became very discouraged with our falling from being top dog.
Mm-hmm.
And something else came along, and another activity came along, powerlifting.
Yep.
And that emerged and was officially came to be around, I believe, 63, 64. And the interest in that pretty much superseded Olympic lifting.
Well, that's why I was going to ask you, Bill. In your opinion, do you think that was like the death knell for Olympic lifting? Or was it, if we still had, let's say we had a guy like Hoffman still driving the bus real hard and really putting it out there and, you know, showing the athletes from York or whoever it was running, would it had a chance to last, or was it just something that powerlifting was evolving now and it was its turn? What do you feel with that?
Well, I think Hoffman became discouraged with Olympic lifting. He realized that, you know, these other countries were using steroids. It would be the same. I think it would be on the same parallel as today. And for many, many, many years, the United States honored the amateur Olympic competitor.
Yep.
And it realized it couldn't compete against these other countries because many other countries, they simply ignored that. They paid their athletes. They were full-time athletes for the most part. And, of course, once again, steroids reared its ugly head. You know, Dr. John Ziegler made the comment afterwards, shortly before his death, that he wished he would have never had anything to do with steroids, that he would have never opened that Pandora's box, which, of course, altered athletics dramatically, especially here in the United States, even though they were in Eastern Bloc, Russia, I believe, Russia, Eastern Bloc countries in the early, I want to say around 54, 55. Okay.
Do you think, I mean, obviously they've been around. They were in, from what I've read with steroids, we're talking in Germany in the 30s, too. I don't know if that's true or not. You might be able to clear that up. But was it the 50s, you feel? Was that when it became very prevalent in the United States? I mean, we know the other countries were taking them, but is that what seemed to hit here in the U.S. in the 50s?
Well, just because something exists.
Right.
For example, take the, you know, take the computer.
Okay? Yeah.
That we're using right now. It existed. You can have a computer that exists, but is it available?
Right.
Is it affordable?
Yep.
You know, if it's not available or affordable, then, you know, to the masses, then for all practical purposes, it isn't there. It really can't be included. As far as steroids, their origination and what have you, the mid-1930s.
Right.
Nazi Germany.
Yep.
And the purpose was to accelerate tissue growth, bone growth, and what have you. And there was a company in the late 40s, CIBA, that worked with, and they actually had the paperwork. The experiments and everything that the Nazis were performing during the 30s.
Yep.
And they produced the product, Dianabol, which is, there's another name for it, an original name for it. But anyway, this is what was, this is what came about in the 50s. And Ziegler was from, I believe, he was in the military, and I believe he was from Maryland. And he was a friend of John Grinnick's. But that's an entirely another story. You know, there's a parallel there with the power rack and the isometrics and what have you. Right around the same time, 1950, I want to say 58, 59, in that area. And there was a handful of York people that, in fact, in the beginning, I talked to John Grimmick. He says the approach to it was, it was like a vitamin, like a, you know, and, you know, that's in the very early times, you know, we didn't feel it was, originally, various people in York, the results were inconclusive as to, you know, as to whether they worked or not. And Ziegler really didn't have controlled circumstances, you know.
Yep.
And a controlled environment, you know. One that is on him, one it isn't, is not on them, and then there's one that's getting a sugar pill or something, you know. So you have variables here, and you can you know, discern who's actually getting results.
Yep.
But the, you know, powerlifting came along, so you know, that's what you have. But you know, progressive resistant exercise is a broad umbrella, encompasses many things. Okay.
Yep.
You not only have weightlifting, but you have fitness. Yep. You have powerlifting, and then as time goes on, you repackage a lot of things that are that you know, come and go. For example, yoga. Yoga for years wasn't talked about. And then I remember when aerobics came about. You know.
Yep.
And the Fonda girl, you know, came out with her tape. You know, back in the,
you know, that,
it just catapulted everything. Now, whether she, you know, she always had a very, she was always very attractive. Whether she did any exercise or not, God only knows. But the fact of the matter is, she looked the part and she played it up and she endorsed it.
And so
that took off.
Yep.
And then I remember Pilates. Okay.
Yep.
I had one of his original books, hardcover books.
Yep.
And, somebody, you know, stumbled across that and said, hey, let's, you know, let's work with this. And, that became very popular and it is today. And now you had, in, I think it was around 1957, there was a couple of fellows in England that, that created something called cross training.
Yep.
I'm sorry, circuit training. It was called circuit training.
Okay.
And then, you know, that was exercise, a variety of different exercises under time.
Right.
You know, you have a stopwatch.
Yep.
You have a circuit training.
Yep.
But, you know, as time goes on, people, you know, pick up on something and they repackage it. A fella came along and said, we're going to call it CrossFit.
Exactly.
Exactly. Now, I'm not knocking it. You know, there's a lot of people that do this. But the thing is, when you take something and you repackage it, you're always going to have a lot of naysayers. You're going to have people that don't like it. You're going to have people that you know, beat up on it simply because, for example, if I'm a bodybuilder, okay, that's what I do. I think that that's the best thing. Well, that's a partial truth. It's the best thing for me.
Right.
I can't say it's the best thing for you.
Right.
You know, you like to do the stone lifting and stuff like that. Well, looking at things from a stone lifting aspect, CrossFit isn't for you.
Right.
Because lifting a huge stone in Iceland is not a, you know, it's not an exercise on a stopwatch. You understand what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So you get a lot of people beating up on that particular activity. And they have reasons for it. Okay. So now you have something called, you know, CrossFit. What's next? I don't know. Oh, and by the way, something else popped up during that time in the last 20 years, and that's kettlebell training.
Yeah, that definitely, and that's still big. But you know what, Bill, I think is going to happen is, you know, I've been seeing more and more stuff where they're saying kind of like the death of lifting and the death of gyms. And I don't really care because most of the gyms, in my opinion, aren't worth spit. And what I'm hoping here is this. I have a feeling that anybody that's worth anything is going to, if they're not doing already, you're going to see us going back to basics again. I think anybody that wants to be successful in anything with weightlifting, whether it's bodybuilding, stone lifting, kettlebells, regular power body lifting, they used to call it power bodybuilding, you know, power lifting, we know what they're doing, et cetera, et cetera. I'd love to see the deadlift, the the squat and overhead. I know everybody loves a bench, but in my opinion, the overhead to me is a true test of a press right there. And I'm talking power cleaning it too, not taking it out of squat stands. If you want to do that, that's fine. But, you know, let's face it, the clean is going to make or break the lift. So it's just going to be that's the way. That's what I'm hoping is happening. I hope we're going to shift back to more of like what you saw in the early years when you started doing the collection of magazines and obviously speaking and you know, you've seen the whole thing. I'm hoping in your lifetime you're going to see it come right back full circle, because that's what I'm hoping right now. And this is going to lead us right into what we wanted to talk about today, which your mentors. And I can't wait to hear. So why don't you tell us your first mentor, Bill, that really, really, maybe at a young age, really really made a big impression on you, if you would, please.
Well, of course, as a young boy, I had a male mentor, and it was my father.
Yep.
My blood father,
yep.
Okay?
Yep.
And,
yep.
And this is going to probably sound corny, but then to a real man, it sounds perfectly natural.
Yep.
I feel my father was the greatest man that ever lived, period.
Yeah, well, and I think you should. That's your father.
From my point of view, as I was growing up, I had a great deal of respect for him.
Yep.
He was an honest man.
Yep.
I remember several times as I was, you know, trying to do various things, and I was failing and stuff like this, and I would get discouraged or I would be hesitant. That's when I was very young. I learned from that.
Yep.
But one time he says, you know, Bill, I have more confidence in you than you do.
There you go.
And he walked away. And
that's awesome.
I don't even remember what I was trying to do. I was trying to do something, and I was failing miserably, and I was just – I don't really remember what it was. But he said that, and he walked away, and I said, wow. And that – helped me develop the confidence, you know, because every kid, you know, I was probably 7 or 8 years old.
Yep.
And you can imagine being a teenager later on, you know, that's kind of an awkward stage. And you're trying to, you know, figure out where your niche is in life, you know, how you fit in or don't fit in, or which way you're going to go. You know, you've got 1,000 forks in the road and you got to pick one, you know. Certain events in your life, imagine there's a certain thing. I've talked to many people about a variety of different things. They happen to be at a certain place at a certain time.
Yeah,
for example,
absolutely.
They meet their wife. Okay.
Yep.
What would happen if they weren't at that particular place at that particular time?
Yep.
Another event would have taken place, and they would have been with another person. And the same way with, you know, selecting a school or a particular line of work. I've known many people that just happened to tag along with somebody.
Yeah.
And because that person says, well, I got this job interview, and I'm going to go over here, and you want to come along? And we'll do lunch and what have you. And he goes along, and they hire both of them.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, but, you know, I think this is real important, too, and I don't think it changes at all. This is what I like. Your parents, let's hope everybody has good parents, and I know a lot of kids don't, but you know something? This comes through even in my family with uncles and my nieces and all that. It's like, kids are going to get impressions right off the bat, whether it's mother and father, uncles, aunts, the whole deal. And it's very important when shaping a young mind, especially. And like you're talking, your dad gave you such confidence. I mean, they're the first people you're really going to have any interaction with from the time they're changing your diaper till the time you're going to the first, you know, kindergarten in school. You're going to be picking all that up. And you know, we've talked about this on a number of shows. I mean, these things shape who you're going to become, and hopefully everyone comes from a good environment. Unfortunately, it doesn't. They don't. But, you know, I do this with my nieces and stuff. I mean, they're 13 down to 7, and I have a little nephew who just turned 5. I think it's very important as a man around women too, young girls. It doesn't matter, any of them, all right? I've never even swore in front of them, Bill, and I can speak the language like anybody out there, and you know, when we're all together raising hell, we don't care. But I've always been very cognizant of that. And secondly, you know, they all know their dad played semi-pro football. It's like he's a weightlifter, a coach. You know, they know what's going on with me and my brothers and, you know, my sisters in martial arts, their mom. I just feel it's very important for them to see examples of very strong men. Now, I'm not saying, you know, no hugs or anything like that, because I'm more loving with those kids than probably anybody. And I'm not like a real touchy guy at all. But when you have children like that around you, they bring the best out in you. And I want them, hopefully, down the road. They're going to make mistakes. That's part of life. But I'm just hoping that when they go after male choices, they think like my uncles, my dad. You know, it's very important. And, you know, that's how I parallel it to you. I mean, it's different with father, son, but it's still the same way. It's an example that as you grow into a man, you're like, we're going to talk about more of your mentors. I'm sure these mentors that you like, you can probably pick something out of them that remind you of your father. Would that be correct?
Well, certainly. It wasn't just my father, but my father had a profound effect on me throughout my life and, right up until his death. Probably the toughest thing that is that I've had to contend with, you know, so far. Other mentors. The football coach. I had a great football coach. He was a great guy. Actually, I had two of them. One was a All-American center from Notre Dame in 1943.
Okay.
And they were both terrific. But I remember, I'll tell you what kind of a guy he was. He always wanted to put us through training. We had 3-a-day training and what have you, 3 times a day and what have you, Hell Week, I guess they called it. And but he always wanted us to do our best. And he could tell if you were doing your best or not. I remember one time we beat somebody, one of our other teams, we beat them severely. I mean, it was like 35-7 or something like that. So we walked home. And the reason we walked home, because we all climbed on the bus, you know, clickety-clack with the cleats, all sat down, we're all joking around and having a great time. We won the game, you know, we beat him. He came on the bus, and we thought we were going to get attaboy, you guys did a great job, you know. He stared at us, he said, I want everybody to get off this bus. And he walked off the bus, and we followed him. Everybody was, they went stone quiet. You know, what's this all about? You know, we're thinking, what's going on? Yeah. We got off the bus, he said, you know, start walking.
Yeah.
And our school, we didn't have we had a practice field, but we didn't have a game field with bleachers.
Yeah.
And we, it was a small school. So we walked home, and it was about, I'm going to say 3/4 of a mile.
Yeah.
Okay, and we're walking on the sidewalk and on the street and everything else. And nobody said a word. And he's right in front of us. And we get back to the locker room and all hell broke loose. He says, that was undoubtedly the worst performance I've ever seen you guys do since I've been at this school. I mean, he read us the riot act.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all looked at each other, and it dawned on us, you know, we could have done a lot better. And he explained one by one, and then he got real personal in everybody's face, including mine. And you didn't do this, and you didn't do that.
Yeah.
And what about this, and what about that? And but then another time, we played our hearts out, one of the toughest schools in our league, and we got beat, I think, by a touchdown or two. And we were just brokenhearted and got on the bus. And he came on the bus and he says, you know, you guys really put out.
Yeah.
And he explained, and he, again, from a team standpoint of view and then individually. And I remember another time we were standing on the sideline waiting to, go back in after the kickoff. And So I played both ways. You know, back then they didn't have the two platoons so much.
Yeah.
And you didn't have, a fella that was only did place kicking or only did field goals. No, it wasn't that way. There wasn't any of that specialty stuff. So anyway, it was a long time ago. But anyway, he was standing there, and I got my football my helmet under my arm, and he says to me, he says, "You know, Bill, there are no winners and there are no losers out here today."
Yep.
He's looking at the field and he's pointing the field. He says, "If you want to know where the losers are at, look behind you." And that was the people in the bleachers. Yep. And he looked at me, real profound look. You know, you got to remember, I'm an impressionable kid. I'm a teenager.
Sure.
He says, "Those people back there, they don't have the privilege of playing football today."
That's right.
And he looked back on the field and I'm thinking, whoa, you know. And he was really into it heavy. And,
well, those are heavy words too. He's laying down on kids, you know. I mean, look, it's like when someone's telling you, you win a game and you're all happy, and then suddenly, basically, they're almost telling you you suck, you know. And you're like, okay, now we lost the game, but what came out of this is the coach said we played our guts out. He went to everybody, you know, that he talked, that's on the team, and telling you you're good, you're doing this, you know, and it's like a life lesson. And it's like, you know, I think coaches, you know, sometimes they get a bad rap about a lot of things, but you know what? They're human like everybody else. And it's like what he saw in you guys today, obviously he probably would have liked to see that the last time you had won. But you lost with dignity, in my opinion. And when the coach comes and praises you like that, he's definitely seen something special in each player there, because if he's naming guys off one by one, you know, there's something maybe he's seeing in you that you don't see. And once again, we go back to your father, you know, or we go back to the uncles and all that. It's like they see things that you don't see. You know, you might feel this and that, but you're like, you know, I just can't pull this off. Well, your dad saw the potential in you, which built more confidence in you. And you know, as a kid, as an adult, how many adults right now are starving just to figure out where they belong, where they're at? There's tons of them out there. There's probably more now than ever because so many people are just confused of their place in society. Well, I believe myself, and we'll see what you say to this, is this. I think in my life, if it wasn't for weightlifting, I'd be one of those confused people walking around, you know, thinking, where am I? Where do I belong? You know, do you like somebody just basically kicking you in the slats every day and telling you you're no damn good? You know, so I think the whole aspect of weightlifting, physical strength, obviously we talk about the will. Obviously you have mentors like your dad and your football coach, and we'll get into more right now. But don't you think, Bill, like all those pieces really, they cultivate you, they kind of shape you. And if you really understand what this whole process is we're talking about, I think they make you a hell of an individual, male or female, don't you?
Well, I think that you've touched on something that's pretty important. With an individual, and even society in general, for example, motion pictures.
Yeah.
For decades, mirror society. But more importantly, society mirrors motion pictures.
Yep.
If an individual sees something in a motion picture, be it a documentary or a drama,
yep,
there's a huge, huge difference. You may go see a movie about an individual based on a book, for example. Somebody writes a book.
Mm-hmm.
And one movie comes to mind is Cinderella Man.
Right, exactly.
That was about the great heavyweight champion boxer of the world, Max Bayer.
Yep.
And he lost the fight.
Yeah.
He didn't have his heart in training. Of course, he never did. He was a
skirt chaser, boy.
No, he was. He was, a great sense of humor and what have you.
Yep.
And he lost the fight. Okay. And Ron Howard depicting, you know, depicted him as a monster, as a killer and what have you.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. He did have a couple of fights where he was in the ring. He had a devastating punch.
Yep.
One of the hardest hitting guys.
Yep.
He had a couple of fights. One fella died shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
Well, Ron Howard said he was a monster. You know, he was a killer. He didn't care.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
It killed him. It nearly killed Max Baer afterwards. He lost all his passion for the game. For the fight game.
Yep.
In fact, the money that he made from a few fights afterwards, he gave to the family.
Yeah.
He broke down. He was just absolutely devastated. And all of his fighting afterwards, he had to get a famous boxer that preceded him, Jack Dempsey, to manage him and bring him out of it.
Yep.
That's how bad it really got him. But that was the thing. That was not a documentary. That was a dramatization. When you take a book and you say, okay, we're going to make a movie, and it will tell you right in the beginning, based on this particular book,
mm-hmm.
based on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to do things to it to make it sell. They want to get the broadest audience.
Yep.
And I can understand all that. But you know, getting back to what you said about society and the individual. For example, if you are told every day
mm-hmm.
from when you're a little kid that you're really strong,
mm-hmm.
you're a great athlete, and then you get into high school, and you become all city and all state. You're a great athlete.
Yep.
Okay. And then you go on to college. You're a great, and everybody all the whole time is, you know, bowing down to you, and you're the greatest. And then society starts to overlook certain things, you know, like maybe your education, you know, not getting very good grades in school or what have you.
Yep.
You go all through college, and you're a great athlete and all this stuff, and you begin to believe it. It's auto-suggestion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you're told something enough, you come to believe it.
Yeah.
And then after college, you don't get any pro contract and you have no education.
Right.
So you're relegated to possibly, sweeping the floor.
Yep.
You know, and the same holds true for an individual that is, brought up in terrible circumstances. Just terrible. Broken home, for example. Not that all broken homes ruin people. I'm not inferring that. There are many that come from a single parent family that are pillars of the community.
Yep.
But I'm simply saying, if they come from a bad environment, I mean terrible, okay, and say nobody in the school likes them, no kids like them, they're troublemakers or what have you. They're searching for a place to fit in. All the kids in the school, and you saw it when you were in school, you have what they used to call cliques.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And you don't fit into this clique. They push you away, and they make fun of you based on any number of things. You know, kids are ruthless. You know, they make fun of your looks. You know, they make fun of your hair. They make fun of you got big ears. They make fun of you got big feet. They make fun of you because of your name.
Yep.
Okay. And they just keep pushing you away. And then you try to fit in and make friends over here in this area. And let's say you stutter or, any number of things. Okay.
Yes.
And then pretty soon there is a crowd that accepts you.
Yep.
And it's the thing that everybody notices about that crowd is everybody in that crowd, nobody likes them for whatever reason.
Exactly.
And they may be very sweet people, but the fact is these other cliques don't want to be associated with them.
Yep.
And then this clique that nobody wants to have anything to do can become dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it goes. I mean, you have any, even if you have, the positive people, okay, and you've seen it when you grew up with them, the one that's has the, you know, magnetic personality.
Absolutely.
Walks into a room and everybody looks at him and starts talking with him, and he starts talking with them and everything. Well, where's he? Sooner or later, he becomes president of the class.
Okay? Yep.
And then he goes out in the real world, and he goes from an entry-level job, and he moves right up the ladder.
Yep.
And then he goes into politics.
Yep.
He had the personality for it. He had a magnetic personality where, you know, he could have a great sense of humor, what have you. And the same holds true with the girls in school, you know.
Absolutely. Perception's a big thing, Bill.
Perception sometimes is far more important than reality.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just like the bumblebee, you know, from an engineering standpoint of view, as the old joke goes, it's from an engineer's point of view, it's impossible for a bumblebee to fly.
Yeah.
Just don't tell the bumblebee.
Exactly.
Power of suggestion, you know. Whether you think you can or you think you can't.
Yep.
Right.
Henry Ford. Yep.
And this is something that I think should play into education, not mm-hmm. only the early years of grade school, middle school, and high school, but it should play into training. It's a mental
yep.
game. You get up and you say to yourself, I'm going to train today, and it's going to be the best training session I ever
yep.
had. That
yep.
has a profound effect on your performance. If you walk into the gym for whatever reason, you've got something on your mind. You've got all these stressors, you know. Say you got a girlfriend that's, there's a problem there, or you had a problem in school, or it's raining. Now, some people are very sensitive to it's raining outside.
Absolutely. Yep.
You know, how many times you heard people say, and they'll be sitting inside a building where there's no windows, how's the weather today? What's it look like outside? Well, you know, I used to say this. I used to say, what do you care? You're going to be here another 8 hours.
Exactly.
I just want to know how it is. Well, okay. You know, you could tell them it's a sunny day, you know.
Yeah, and they want to talk to somebody. There's a lot of lonely people in the world. There's people that look like they're all full of success, or they're in great shape, or they're doing this or doing that. But when you really go and meet them, and if you drill down into them after a while, if you have the luxury of maybe you start building a friendship, or could be a girlfriend, could be anything, you're going to find out a lot of people are very lonely. And it's too bad, because I don't know. You know, you hit it on the head with, obviously, the mental thing is so important. And, you know, especially when you're looking at mentors like we are today, it's like you know, I did a thing yesterday. I'll probably do it at the end of today's show. I did a thing where I was like, stand up, take three breaths, you know, go through the nose, out through the mouth, and say to yourself, I can and I will. That might sound real corny to people if they're listening to this, but it's not, because if you do that, like I just said, and you stand there and say you do that 25 times, I dare you to tell me you don't feel better. Because things are going on now, not only neurologically, but you're pumping your body up in a whole different way. You're giving your body stimulation through those words and that breathing. I practice that every time I go out and lift weights or lift stones. It's like, even if I'm not saying it, I've said it so many times to myself, it'll go off in my head automatically. Those are the things you want in your life. You know, when you come into a situation, do you want to think, oh, I can't do this? Or, well, maybe I can, but maybe not today. I'd much rather have somebody say, hey, you know what? I'll give it a shot no matter what. I don't care if it knocks me on my ass or not, but I'll come back and do it again. I'll learn how to do it. I'll learn from you, or I'll go find a mentor. I'll go find somebody that's done these things that, you know, I'm interested in. And believe me, everybody out there, that mentor you find will be more than happy to help you. They might, maybe they're a little rugged, maybe they're a little crusty around the edges, maybe they seem like they don't want to give you the time, but I got news for you. Anybody you single out, unless there's something mentally wrong with them, is always going to help you out. And that's where we get into the next one. Who would be your next mentor, Bill, whether it's in business or physical culture?
Well, I'll get to that. But first, I want to say something about
go ahead.
that along those lines,
yep,
that the world knows, not just in the weightlifting area. Yep. And actually went to high school near me back in the 60s for a while.
Okay.
His name is Robin Williams.
Oh, wow.
And he, it came as a huge shock.
Yep.
To the world that he would take his own life.
Yep.
And I think the reason for that is because he seemed like such a happy guy. He was, you know, but that was his, he was an entertainer.
Yep.
And, you know, if you ever see any of his shows or anything, his stand up, you know, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Now, here's a quote that's interesting along the lines of people. He says, and I quote, "I used to think the worst thing in life was to end up all alone. It's not. The worst thing in life is to end up with people that make you feel alone."
Yeah.
And I think that's an interesting quote, because you can be in a room full of people and you can be all alone.
Hey, Bill, I know friends of mine. I think I felt it too before. You know, you'd meet a nice girl, good looking, pretty smart, you know, physical, because all my friends all lift. And, you know, you just don't, I can't make it otherwise unless it's somebody that's physical in some way. It's a whole different meter reader in the head with everybody like that, because you got to have somebody that kind of understands what you're doing, because it's very hard to be doing a lot of that stuff and not giving all the time to the other person, which isn't fair either. But a lot of my friends have said the same thing, like what you just quoted, is you're with somebody you think you really like, but you still feel empty, you know? And I don't know if that goes back to who the person is who's saying that, or if it's truly, you know, you think that you're happy, but you're not. And does that come down to who you're with? Well, that can be part of it, but my feeling is this. It's like, I think you need to go out and discover yourself. And I don't mean all this BS with taking one course after another, or you're trying yoga, or you're trying CrossFit, or you want to lift stones. I see far too many people do things like that, and what it does, it's like a substitute for a while. And they might be happy, say, for a month or two or three, and you go and see them eventually, and they fall right back into that same trap again. And I think what you have to do with anything is you have to discover yourself through yourself, meaning maybe you learn to be quiet, and you learn to sit in a room and try to focus on something you really want to do. And of course, there's a million things that are going to try to travel through your head. But what you will do eventually is you will silence, as I say, the critics in your head. That makes for a better person, because you build this massive amount of confidence. And then I don't care what it is, you need to take something big on. And I mean, maybe it would take you a full year. It might take you 5 years to complete. And you know, you take off little bite-sized chunks, where I always like to say little pieces of stones equal to a big boulder. Things of that nature is going to carry you further than 5 billion tapes to listen to, 10,000 things to get into, because none of them are going to equate to what you really need. And then thirdly, I say is this, being you, me, you know, everybody else that's been on the show or listening to the show, we're all physical beings, and I think you need to get that one foot out in front of the other, no matter what it is, and get going, because don't wait for the best exercise program. Don't wait for the best thing to listen to motivate you. You know, don't wait till, well, it's not really a good time of year. You need to get out and do it, and that's what I think is the most important thing, but I think it's one of the most lacking things in people's life. What do you think about that?
Well, people are very impressionable, especially at a young age. They're like clay.
Yep.
You know, my father, get back to my father for a moment, as far as a mentor, he was a workaholic, and naturally that was passed down, because I tended to emulate what he was. People seem to think many times when they grow up in a particular environment, their environment is normal. If it's a terrible environment, like I said earlier, or if it's an average, or I should say normal, okay? Normal is like what 50% of the people are raised in. Or if you are raised in affluence.
Yep.
You know, silver spoon type of affair. But my father would say, anyone can work for somebody else. It's a real genius who creates his own niche in life.
There you go.
And he's right, you know. But, opportunity plays into that very heavily. For example, you know, not everybody can be a Bill Gates.
Right.
A Steve Jobs.
Right.
An Edison. A Tesla. Okay. Not everybody can be Henry Ford. Dale Carnegie. Not everybody can be a tremendous athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan is one of my mentors in that here's a fella that grew up.
Yeah.
Wanted to play basketball in the worst way. He was cut from his 10th grade basketball team.
Yep.
Went home. Walked in his bedroom, closed the door, and cried his eyes out.
Yep.
One thing he had a burning desire to do was play basketball.
Yep.
And one of his great quotes, and I'll paraphrase it, I can accept failure, but I can't accept not trying.
There you go.
And that's the thing. The great... Floyd Patterson,
mm-hmm.
boxing champion of the world at one time, back in the 50s. They used to make fun of him. He's been knocked down more than anybody else. Well, his reply to that is, yeah, and I got up more than anybody else.
There you go. That's important.
Okay. More times. The other thing my father used to tell me is, the thing that impressed him was someone that could make something out of nothing.
Yep.
You know, you've seen people that repurpose. That's the latest and greatest craze now, is to repurpose things. Rather than destroy it completely, you know, for example, cast iron or steel or anything like that. People will go to a junkyard, garage sales, yard sales, what have you, and they'll pick something up, and they can see something in that to repurpose it. They can make a pot holder or a stand. And I've seen some of the stuff that they do with a lot of the industry. Old factories are torn down, and they'll take something and they'll make it into something completely different.
Yep.
And some of this, you know, some of this stuff commands high prices. So I give them a lot of credit for ingenuity and creativity in that regard.
Yep.
A few of the other people that didn't impress me is Bruce Lee.
Oh, yeah.
You know, aside from his martial arts, he was one of my customers back in the day.
Oh, okay.
When I was first starting out, and one of his quotes that I think education is all based on, and as you evolve and you progress in any part of life. This is one of his quotes. Absorb what is useful, discard what is useless, and add what is essentially your own. And now, a lot of people will say, well, weightlifting is a science.
Yep.
No, others will say, no, it's an art. Well, from a technical standpoint of view, it's both. When you start out as a young man, a young person, a young girl, young boy, you observe. You watch other people doing things. Mm-hmm. And if you're in a positive environment and you see something that fascinates you, you watch them. Watch them, and then maybe you watch another person do the same thing. And then you watch three or four more people, how they do things.
Yep.
And you say, no, I think I'm going to take a whack at this. I'm going to try doing this. So you try a particular activity, let's say weightlifting, seeing as how that's the subject we're on, okay? You watch somebody do a clean and jerk. You watch somebody do a bench press, a deadlift, what have you, okay?
Yep.
You watch all these other people do it, and you walk up to the bar, and you watch what they do, and, you know, you put your hands on there, put your feet about shoulder width apart, reach down, pull up on the bar, okay? Now, many people have a different method of doing it based on their own preference, whether they're tall, short, mm-hmm. again, bone structure, whether they're, you know, ectomorph, mesomorph, endomorph, okay, their joint muscle attachments and what have you, whatever they feel comfortable with, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's like learning a golf, you know, learning to play golf. First thing you want to do is get somebody to show you how to do it the right way, because habits are easily, both good and bad, formed right in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, you're going to play hell trying to change those habits after a while. So you want to learn how to do it the right way. And this is something. So when you first watch other people, it's a science.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, like yeah. biology, zoology, any ology. It's a science. You're studying how somebody else does something, what somebody mm-hmm. else comes to believe is true.
Yep.
Now, the art part of it, he's like the famous artists of the world. You know, you don't think Picasso and all these other people created art. No, they watched other people. Michelangelo watched, you know, didn't watch him, but I mean, saw his art and got ideas.
Yep.
Okay. Now, what sets you apart from other people in any walk of life, art, weightlifting, what have you, is when you can do something either different or better.
Yeah.
Now, Picasso is known for, you know, abstract art, okay? Mm-hmm. Other artists are known for other type of art, okay?
Yeah.
And theirs is set apart differently. Rembrandt, what have you.
Yeah.
That's the difference. So, in the beginning, for you, for example, stone lifting, you watch somebody else do this. And
yep.
you got some ideas. Well, I reach down, I put my arms around it like this, and I get certain leverages, and I'm like, hey, I can do that. Well, the first time you probably were a miserable failure, okay? If you didn't
yep.
do something right. So you had to discover something about yourself. Well, I won't do yep. that again. I'm not going to drop it on my toe, you know? and the same holds true with anything else. So a science and an art.
Yeah.
And the same holds true with being analytic and creative.
Yep.
You know, analyze something else and then, you know, go off on your own and, you know, create what you have. But
yep.
Another person that impressed me personally is Muhammad Ali.
Okay.
I remember when he first started boxing, you know, and he fought, and he was a gold medal winner in the Olympics. I think it was, I think it was 64. But anyway,
yep.
And then, of course, his fights with
Sonny Liston
made him a champion and,
yep.
and what have you. And, I, you know, you can look it up on the Internet as far as the film. And, you know, he was very arrogant. At that time, he was Cassius Clay. And,
yep.
You know, I am the greatest and all this stuff. And I remember those days and I think, wow, this guy's really an egotistical, you know,
yep.
he's really into himself and all that stuff. Well, I'll tell you what, he could back it up. And as time
yep.
went on, you know, even though some of his best years were he was banned from boxing because of his spiritual beliefs.
Yep.
But regardless, even to this day, some of the things he has said, you know, throughout his life, make a great deal of sense. I mean, his own philosophies about life, and he's wonderful around children. He's
yep.
absolutely he's just you can and children are just attracted to him like a magnet, you know.
Well, you know what I think too, Bill. Kids, they have a very keen sense of people. They can smell a phony a mile away. I've
oh,
seen
yeah.
it enough times, and they also can tell people that don't really want to be around them. I've been around with enough people, and we've been at events or parties or this and that. Kids can measure you up pretty fast, and that's what I like about them, because, you know, when a kid likes you or wants to do something, you know, maybe you throw the ball with them or whatever, they're truly in it. It's not somebody that's just doing it for the sake of doing it, and that's what's so unique and special about them. But you know, it's an honor as an adult or a younger kid, obviously, when a kid seeks you out and does that. You know, we do that over at my sister's house. I hang with the kids more than I do with the adults, and I'll tell you why. Because they're only going to be young for so long, and I'm going to lose them eventually down the road because, you know, they're going to want to go their own way. They're going to hang with their own friends. Yeah, it's never going to, you know, you'll still be the good uncle and all that, but they're going to expand their, you know, their wingspan, so to speak. You'll always be important to them, and as they get older, you'll most likely all go back like it was. But you got to know enough to back off them and let them be themselves too, and always, you know, let them know you're always there too. That's real important. So I think that that's one of the most important things that can happen is when they seek you out. I think that's a great thing.
Well, yeah, it's and I've been a mentor to several people in my life, but the most important thing is to be compassionate and understanding and patient.
Yep.
With another individual. And I take a liking to people that I can sense a been there and done that.
Yep.
In other words, they're trying to do what exactly what I tried to do when, you know, when I was young. There's a few other people that impress me. Nikola Tesla versus Thomas Edison. I only discovered Tesla quite by accident when I was in the later years of college. I never knew him up through high school. Everything was Edison, Edison, Edison. But I think a lot of that had to do with the Cold War and a certain, well, you know, Tesla was Russian and Edison was, of course, American. But Tesla was far, far head and shoulders above Edison. You know, he was university trained. Edison wasn't. I think Edison was a high school dropout for whatever reason, if he made it to high school.
Yep.
And Edison had a team of he had several people working for him. And anytime they invented something or came across something, of course, Edison, by the fact he was their employer, he would get credit for it.
Absolutely.
You know, he came within hours of inventing the telephone, you know, stuff like that.
Yep.
But Tesla, what I felt was remarkable about him is that he was working for Westinghouse. George Westinghouse came to him and he says, you know, I'm having real financial problems here. I don't know what I'm going to do and all that. You know, and of course, Tesla had several patents and stuff and he was getting paid by Westinghouse. And Tesla said, well, don't worry. You can have all the patents.
Yep.
He didn't charge him anything. And he died, you know, like many famous people.
Yep.
Bernard McFadden, for example, died broke. Well, Tesla died broke. I think he was hit by an automobile.
Yep.
But he impressed me. As far as business people, Henry Ford, absolutely, as you can tell, he's, you know, right from my area here. And I was always impressed with his thinking, not only with regarding, you know, automobiles and stuff like that, but his philosophies on life. Some of them I didn't agree with. He had, you know, during the 30s, he had some real, what I feel, some real, some of his ideas were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But Robert Collier was a great copywriter for advertising. I was impressed with some of his ideas. Napoleon Hill, as far as positive thinking. Napoleon Hill is... I have many, many of his quotes laying around here. And now, for example, one of his quotes, Edison failed 10,000 times before he made the electric light. Do not get discouraged if you fail a few times. And that's it. Education, I remember growing up, education, I feel that there's far too much emphasis on the negative aspects, what you do wrong. I think people should accentuate the positive.
Yep.
For example, if you take a test of 100 questions and you get, you know, 96 of them correct, you know, the teacher will beat you up for those four questions. Why didn't you get them right?
Exactly.
Hey, what about the, you know, no, they want to know why you made those mistakes. And, then, of course, there's punishment involved.
Yep.
You know, I've got to get these grades. I've got to get this grade point. I don't care about your grade point. Did you learn anything by it?
Exactly.
The educational part. Because nobody's going to care about your grade point when you get out in the real world. You know,
nope.
That may get you in a college. That may get you in the door as far
yep.
as employment. But now you got to toe the line.
Yeah.
You know, modern day people, for example, Anthony Robbins, he's a positive
yep.
Speaker and what have you. I've listened to a lot. I used to have his tapes and stuff. I would listen to those tapes.
Yep.
I also have all the tapes of Napoleon Hill. I listen to
yep.
those quite often. So there's a lot of input there. Now, as far as the Iron Game's concerned, who impressed me over the years? Sigmund Klein.
Yep.
I liked him a great deal. I think he was very honest when it came to anything that he did or anybody else did. His training methods were tremendous. I visited his gym. John Grimmick.
Yep.
Just like the guy next door. Very, very,
yep.
very nice person.
Yep.
He wasn't all caught up in himself. Used to get letters from him. They were just on regular bond paper. Some of it was like yellowed around the edges. He probably found it and he saw, I'm going to use this, you know. He used a manual typewriter and three or four of the keys didn't work.
Yep.
But he was a great guy. Always answered my questions. Reg Park.
Reg Park,
a true English gentleman, if there ever was one.
Yep.
Very kind to me. I knew him early on. We used to have telephone conversations and exchange letters when I was his North American agent for his publications.
Wow.
I met Bill Pearl.
Bill Pearl,
very
yep.
nice person. Very, very kind. Did a tremendous amount for the Iron Games through winning many bodybuilding contests at several gyms. Larry Scott, I met him.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Very upbeat person. Nice
yep.
person. I had correspondence with him over the years, telephone conversations. Very nice person. Met Dave Draper. Very
wow.
nice person.
Cool.
My principles as far as how I feel about life in general.
Yep.
Honesty. Be polite. Family is first. Be kind to animals.
Yep.
Don't compromise your principles. Now, this is a really, really tough area because, you know, it's easy for you to have certain principles about, say, business or what have you.
Yep.
But if the business starts failing and you need, for example, an influx of money or something, sometimes people will compromise their principles. And now that's a tough call.
Yep.
I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen in the Iron Game.
Yep.
I remember when John Bailick took over Iron Man from Terry Rader in 1986. Had a completely different format. Excuse me. And I talked to him about it. He had a questionnaire in the back of the magazine. He claimed he read every single one of them.
Yep.
Probably did. To get a feel for what people wanted in a magazine. And the first thing he did is he eliminated all the old-time stuff. And he accentuated, for example, how to get big arms. There's a lot of photography in it because, he was a photographer. And so was one of the people on staff. So he had great photography.
Yep.
He had more women's stuff in there and a huge amount of advertising. The reason he gave me was because when he got the magazine, the readership, the subscriptions, which is the backbone, were dwindling, diminishing returns because there were more people, dropping the subscription that were signing up. So it was around, I think, around 15,000.
Wow.
And Bailick told me he couldn't live on that.
Yep.
He had to get it up around 100,000. So he had to give the people what they wanted.
Yep.
And along with that, he had a lot of advertising in the magazine for things such as clothing and supplements. Mm-hmm. And they're both very lucrative. You can only sell so many barbell plates to somebody, but the clothing wears out and the supplements naturally are ingested and used up.
Yep.
But that's, you know, that's what he did. So as much as he liked the old timers, you know, the articles by Willoughby and stuff like that about, you know, what they did, and they just didn't seem to be that popular at the time.
Right.
Now, as far as where the Iron Game is going today, it could turn around. But you're going to have to understand something, you know, before you get into that. You don't have a Mr. America contest anymore. There's no AAU Mr. America contest. It was dropped. Okay. Yeah. You have the Mr. Olympia. You have the NABBA, you know, Mr. Universe. And the judging will dictate what these competitors are going to do. And you see what is going on there. In that aspect. Now, as far as Olympic lifting, you're down to two lifts since 1972.
Yeah.
They dropped the press, in my opinion. You know, some claim, you know, that the reason was it was dangerous. Well, if you've ever snatched any of the quick lifts, you've got two quick lifts left, you know. Those are dangerous. They're a quick lift. Okay. You're injured all the time. But I think the reason it was dropped is because the judges got lazy.
Yeah, I agree with
because
you.
Because you had the press for how many years?
Yeah.
You know? Okay, so you've got two lifts in the Olympic lifting. Where's that going to go?
Nowhere.
And you saw what nearly happened to wrestling, Olympic wrestling.
Yeah, absolutely.
So my personal opinion is Olympic weightlifting.
Yep.
They've got to add some more lifts. They've got to, they have to make it so people can identify with it because, you know, 99.9% of people that watch the Olympics may, some of them may have lifted weights.
Yep.
But certainly haven't done Olympic lifting.
No,
not at all. The whole concept to the average person is weightlifting. Well, you just simply have to be strong.
Yep.
Well, we both know that's not the case. It's a total, it's a complete total body act of coordination.
Yep.
So I think that that's something that, will it ever turn around? Excuse me. If somebody puts on contests, the judging changes, where people will appreciate it, appreciate the discipline and dedication.
Yep.
I'm anti-steroids.
Yep.
You know, a lot of people will, well, they don't use, as, back then they didn't use as many. Well, you're still on steroids.
Right.
Today, they're on any number of things beyond steroids.
Yep.
If people don't want to look like that, why would they want to go to the contest or watch it in the media?
Yep.
But that's my point of view. Can it be turned around again? Yeah. As far as somebody promoting it, you know, one of the greatest promoters of bodybuilding is gone now, Joe Weaver.
Yep.
You know, love him or hate him, he was undoubtedly the greatest promoter. He had contests everywhere, and his Mr. Olympia was his crowning achievement.
Yep.
It's gone on for 50 years. But by the same token, I think I might have mentioned before, only 14 or 15 people won it out of 50 years. You had all these multiple wins. Personally, I think you should have, like they had in the Mr. America, one-time win.
That's it.
Now, give these other people a chance. You know, there's nothing worse than going up against a guy that's won it the last 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
And believe me, next year, nobody's going to remember who came in.
Who you are. Right.
Nobody.
Bill, we're running on time now. Do you got a lot more people, or would you want to pick this up in the next show? What do you got left?
That's good. I've got everybody that.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. I want you to give out your website, all your information. I'll do mine, and then just hang on the line for a minute, and we'll talk. Okay.
Okay.
Please. Thank you.
The name of my website is superstrengthtraining.com. I've been in the business 45 years. I distribute strength training books and courses through my website and with a paper catalog. You can order the catalog on the website. And please sign up for my free daily newsletter. There are boxes all over the website on every page. Just enter your name and your email address. All my publications are shipped worldwide, priority mail. I have such authors as Reg Park, Paul Anderson, Bob Peoples, Perry Rader, Bradley J. Steiner, Sigmund Klein, John Grimmick, Mark Berry, Harold Ansorg, David P. Willoughby, George Jowett, Anthony DiTillo, just to name a few. Thank you very
Without
much.
Without a doubt. Yeah. You got everything there, Bill, then?
That's it.
You're good? Okay. This is Motivation and Muscle. This is a podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We are sponsored by U.S. Wellness Meats. That's www.grasslandbeef.com. Like I said in the beginning, go out and give John a try. He's the best. Secondly, we've got Saugerties Chiropractic Center, 845-246-5020. That's 845-246-5020. That is in the New York State area only. Give them a call. They will take fantastic care of you. Thirdly, we have Dr. William Wong. That's www.docsprefer.com. Once again, Dr. Wong is a regular on the show. And just to let you know, too, Mark Colligan is going to be on the show, and he's probably going to be a regular, too. We're just waiting for him to get his Skype set up, and we'll have my chiropractor regularly on the show, which I think people are going to love because this guy is up on everything. And last but not least, we got AtomicAthletic.com. Go out and check out his Super Squat Bar. Regularly $299. It's now on sale for $225 plus shipping, which, like I said in the beginning, is very affordable from what Roger told me. So that's www.AtomicAthletic.com. Our site is www.FiorelloBarbellCo.com. www.motivationandmuscle.com. We're on iTunes and Stitcher. Tell us what you like about the show. If there's something you'd like Bill and I to do, FiorelloBarbell@NICAP.RR.com. You can get a hold of us on Facebook at Fiorello Barbell and Motivation and Muscle. Bill Hinburn, once again, another great show. This is like, how do I put it? I guess you're like the encyclopedia to me. I'm learning more and more stuff that there's no way I would ever be able to probably process through the rest of my life. So I thank you for being on today. And Bill's going to be on biweekly, so you'll see Bill on 2 weeks from today. And we're more than happy to have him on. It's quite an honor to have you on, Bill, and I thank you for being on today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your kindness. I look forward to talking to you in 2 weeks.
Okay, Bill. Just stay on the line, and I'm going to sign off. So for Bill Hinburn, this is Eric Fiorello. Thanks again for listening to the show. And like I said, if there's something you want us to talk about, fine. And remember this. Go out and lift something heavy, boulders, steel, whatever. But most of all, if somebody seeks you out, help them out. It doesn't cost you a dime to do that, and just think what you could be doing. So we'll talk to you soon. Have a great rest.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.